right. We're here at Sharp Facets Gallery. It's time for Meet Me at the Diner. And this afternoon we have Cason Gaither with us. He is a candidate for the U.S. House 3rd District. So that means he wants to go all the way to Congress. You're just skipping over all the state government and going all the way to Congress, huh?
Yes, ma'am. I think the big problem is in Washington, D.C.
Well, I don't think there's anybody here that wouldn't agree with that as far as a problem. But tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a college graduate. What have you been doing?
Yes, ma'am. I'll start with my education. I went to the College of Charleston, where I was a political science major. I was inducted into the National Political Science Honor Society in 2003. In 2006, I went back to school for my master's in international business at the Moore School of Business at the University of South Carolina. I first got involved in politics working on the campaign of Vincent Shaheen. I was technically employed by the SCDP, but I was really working hard for Vincent Shaheen to try and get him elected to the governorship of our state.
And how did you feel when he got defeated?
It was heartbreaking. I worked very, very hard to try and see him get elected, and it was a crushing defeat to see him lose. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay, all right. Well, I just was curious because, I think a lot of people, young people, get involved, don't they, in politics and the political process. Some turn away from it because they get disillusioned, and some go on with it.
Honestly, I wish there were more young people involved. I've been working the campaign pretty hard for the past 4 months, and just about every meeting I go to, I'm one of the youngest people in the room. I am 31 years old. I'm a fairly newcomer to the political scene, but it's a bit disheartening to see a lack of young people involved in the party process.
So what made you decide to go for this office?
I want to see order restored to our government. I feel that Washington, D.C. is broken, the system is broken, and we need to have someone in that office that will represent the people of the 3rd Congressional District.
Okay. So what do you think it really takes, though, to be a congressman? I mean, this is a huge undertaking. What type
Absolutely.
Of background have you had? What type of jobs? Are you working right now?
Right now I'm campaigning full-time. I've been an entrepreneur. When I finished business school, I finished my master's in international business in May of 2008. I graduated into the teeth of the worst recession in 3 generations.
Well, that should have toughened you up.
Oh, it absolutely toughened me up. And within 5 months of graduating from one of the best international MBA programs in the country, if not the world, I was waiting tables.
Mm-hmm.
My generation got left out in the cold. I played by the rules. I worked hard. I studied hard. I kept my nose clean. And when it came time for me to reap the benefits of my education, the jobs weren't there. And that's what, in particular, drew me into the political process. I want to make sure that future generations, and not just current people graduating from college, but 15 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, that people have economic opportunity and there are jobs in this country when they graduate from school.
Well, what kind of things would you look at then, Cason, to prevent this? Because there are a lot of people working from all different directions to do this. So what would you look at and say, these are the things that I could make changes to?
Specifically, I think my main focus of my campaign and the number one priority that I will have in Congress will be making sure that our banking system is not taking advantage of the taxpayers. I don't want to see any more Washington bailouts of big Wall Street banks.
Okay. And anything else?
Specifically, I think that you have to separate investment banking from commercial banking. When banks are allowed to gamble with your money, taxpayers are left holding the bag, and that's not right.
Yes, the only problem I have with the banking system now is it has been so pulled back that we have people that have good credit scores and good capabilities that cannot get loans. The banks
exactly.
are not loaning.
Exactly.
So, I mean, we have a double-edged problem. If we had the banks a little bit, I'll use the word looser, shall we say,
mm-hmm.
they would be out there loaning money to be able to do startup businesses, to do some of these things. Just the housing market would recover because people would be able to get into houses. Now, maybe not to the extent that it was, but this is a big holdback on our economy.
Yes, ma'am, you're exactly right.
So how would you pull a balance there?
Well, I think I keep coming back to the separation of investment and commercial banking. The FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, insures consumer deposits up to $250,000 when they mm-hmm. put their money in a bank. What happens is the bank then takes that money and they gamble with it. They invest in often risky bets, and when those bets don't work out, the taxpayers are left having to fit the bill. Until the banks have quote-unquote skin in the game, until they are held accountable for their risky bets, we're going to continue right down the road, and we're going to end up right where we were in 2008 with a financial collapse. And I want to avoid a financial collapse at all costs.
Well, I don't see how anything can be happening along that line right now. I mean, we don't have anything happening with the banks right now.
Well, we actually do. The Volcker Rule was set to go into effect in July of 2012. And if you look in the past couple weeks, just recently with J.P. Morgan Chase and their continuing losses, that's...
But that was their loss. That doesn't involve any people's money. That's their loss. There is a difference.
If you look at Lehman Brothers, same concept.
Well, Lehman Brothers, that may be different, but the current one was their loss. It was not taxpayers' money. It wasn't. This was their investment that was losing. None of the money that is invested for individuals is at risk.
The fear is that you're going to have a domino effect. You have one big bank take one big loss, and it causes a ripple effect across the financial community, and you're right back where you were in 2008.
So I ask you again, how do you stop the? How do you keep banks from not being involved in investing, whether it's investing in real estate, investing in businesses? How do you do that?
I'm not opposed to banks investing. I'm opposed to banks investing with our money. You have to separate commercial banking and investment banking. If you put your money in the bank, it should be insured. Your money should be there, and the taxpayer shouldn't be there to fit the bill when that money is gambled away by Wall Street executives and then lost. It needs to be accounted for in that account. And the Volcker Rule proposes that 97% of consumer deposits are kept on hand in a bank. That allows the banks to hedge and gamble with 3% of it so they can keep up with inflation and they can make moves to keep themselves profitable. But commercial banking, consumer banking, shouldn't be an exciting prospect where hedge fund managers are making, you know, $15 million bonuses. Those guys that are making those bonuses aren't being compensated for taking safe bets. They're being compensated for taking risk. The problem is the risks they're taking are happening with our money. If they want to gamble their own money, I'm totally fine with that. Mm-hmm. But I think if you saw that separation of investment banking and commercial banking, I think you'd see those investment bankers making much more conservative bets. And when they bet wrong on a big bet and they lose, we're the ones that end up on the hook to fit that bill with the taxpayer bailout.
Well, as far as our local banks here in South Carolina, I don't think we're having that problem.
No, ma'am. This is more a Washington, D.C. to Wall Street problem.
Exactly. And we're trying to establish how we can help South Carolina and particularly the 3rd District here.
Exactly. But
I think one of the biggest problems that we have here in the 3rd District is the fact that people are not being able to get bank loans. And it's not just the 3rd District. It's across the state. It's across the country.
You're exactly
so
right.
As far as problems that we have out there with the banking, I think they have put such brakes on everything that there is nothing happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of at a standstill, aren't we?
We are. Like I said, until there is reform within the system, until you separate commercial banking from investment banking, we're going to wind up right back where we were with bankers taking gambles with consumer deposits, which the government ends up having to bail out at the end of the day, which puts the taxpayer on the hook. And I'm opposed to that.
Actually, we don't have to bail them out.
They're
insured up to $250,000, but we don't have to bail them out. That was a decision that was made. But to this day, nobody really knows what would have happened if they hadn't bailed it out.
I shudder to think what our country would look like right now if our banking system had collapsed further than it had in 2008. We would be talking about not just a great recession, but a great global depression.
Maybe, but we certainly have gone over the edge on bailing out certain ones that have been bailed out.
Absolutely. I don't want to have to bail out anyone else.
The number of banks that have closed has been tremendous over the last two and a half, three years now.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of banks have been consolidated. They have definitely pulled back on what the banks are doing.
Mm-hmm.
But so your basic point is the difference between investment banking and commercial banking.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I guess we would say that the credit unions are pretty safe.
You know, I'd really have to do some more research on that. Speaking off the cuff, I don't know exactly what that market looks like. I'd have to do some more research to be able to answer that question intelligently.
Okay. But as far as most of the banks here, they have been, any that were even close have been pulled back from the edge, and they're no longer there. I believe, all the banking in our area. You're talking about specifically on Wall Street. You know, let's move on and talk about something else, because we could spend the whole time going back and forth on this and not solve a thing.
You're right, but I think it's important that we have this debate.
Are we debating?
You and I are not.
I didn't know we were debating.
We're absolutely not debating.
Right.
But I think in our country, I think it's important for people to talk about it and to educate themselves on it. And as soon as you start talking about finances with most people, their eyes glaze over and they get this faraway look in their eye. But it's vital to the health of our country. It's something that I have some knowledge of, and I think it's important that we talk about it and we come to a consensus about how we move forward to prevent another collapse like we saw in 2008.
Okay. Well, all right. We have touched on that subject. What other things, though? You were telling me before we came on the air here today that you thought we needed more concentration on the 3rd District here as far as jobs and the economy.
Absolutely.
Now, as far as what do you see as an avenue to bring jobs into South Carolina as from a congressional from the U.S. Congress?
Well, I think you have to create an environment that's pro-business, but at the same time doesn't sacrifice clean air, clean water, things that are important to the individuals that live in the 3rd Congressional District. Our district is comprised of lakes. I mean, from the Oconee County all the way down through Edgefield and Saluda, it's freshwater lakes are a huge component of the 3rd Congressional District.
Sure.
And it's an economic engine. There are tons and tons of people that are retiring to this area to take advantage of that lake access, coming from all over the country to retire here in the 3rd Congressional District.
So what kind of jobs would you think would be appropriate for our area that the 3rd Congressional District in Congress could bring to this area?
Well, we've always had a heavy manufacturing base in this area from the textile industry going way, way back. And I think there are a lot of people that are out of work in those industries. I think how you put people back to work is through training and through infrastructure and investment in education.
Okay. But what kind of jobs would you see, since you're talking about the lakes and this type of thing? What kind of industry would be good for our area?
Well, I think the people here are very qualified, and I think if you invest in worker training,
I'm talking about
bringing in advanced manufacturing. And if you're going to bring in advanced manufacturing, you have to have a skilled and intelligent and capable workforce. And until you invest in your people, we're going to continue to compete with North Carolina and Georgia and California and New York and states around this country for those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at the incentives that many of these states offer for corporations to locate in that area. If you have the most educated, skilled workforce, that's a very tough competitive advantage to overcome for a state like North Carolina or Georgia or some other state to attract those positions. You have to invest in your people. When you start investing in South Carolina, when you start investing in the people here and bringing your citizenry up to a very well-educated, very skilled workforce, then you have an opportunity to attract major industry to the state.
How would you do that, Kaysen?
I think you support public education, and I don't think it's just a K through 12. I think it's also the tech schools, and I think you need to bring technical education into the classroom at a much younger age. If you look at how, you know, elementary, middle school, high school, you might have some computer training in there in little bits, but I think you have to seriously invest in the advanced technologies that are going to drive the 21st century.
Well, now you're talking about now, is education a state issue or is it a federal issue?
I would say it's primarily a state issue,
mm-hmm.
but it's something the federal government certainly can't ignore.
They can't ignore. And you mean that by saying what? That do we need a Department of Education? Do we need funding coming from the federal government? How should that be done?
I'll give an example, and this is kind of shows the priorities of our country. Currently, we're spending $2 billion a week in Afghanistan. Can you imagine what a $2 billion investment in the public education system in South Carolina would do for our children?
Okay, so what are you saying? That you think that we should not be in the war in Afghanistan and that we should divert all that money back here to the states?
Should
we have a military?
Absolutely. In fact, the number one priority of a government is to protect its people. I think you have to have protections. But if you look at the world map, I mean, there are hot spots, North Korea, Iran. You obviously have to keep an eye on Al-Qaeda and the war on terror. But the 21st century warfare is still being thought of and fought with 20th century mindsets. And I think that, you know, you look at the drone program, the overhead drones and some of the attacks they've used and been able to take out senior al-Qaeda leadership. Mm-hmm. I think that's the warfare of the 21st century. I think committing boots on the ground and committing troops and spending the billions of dollars we do around the world needs to be rethought.
Okay. So we should have a smaller military?
We should have a more efficient military. I don't know exactly what that would mean in terms of numbers, mm-hmm. but I think you have to focus on technology. I think you have to focus on intelligence gathering, and I think you have to prioritize where you want to commit troops when you're making the decision to go to war. And I'm not going to argue, you know, I have no qualms about Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, hindsight's always 20/20 there. The problem I have with it is the money that we spent going into Iraq and Afghanistan. For the first time in American history, our country went to war without raising taxes. And I don't like taxes any more than anyone else. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to spend the money and you're going to go to war, then you should pay it off. What we did is we spent $1 trillion and then didn't pay it off. We basically kicked the can down the road for my generation to pick up the tab. And I don't think that's right. If you want to make the justification for the war in Iraq and Afghanistan and you want to go into those places, you know, I'm not going to argue about the justification. All I'm going to say is pay it off and don't try and kick the can down the road and leave someone else to pick up the tab.
Hmm. Well, you know, that all of that is very true. I mean, all of that's true. So, but if you went to Congress and you were in the 3rd Congressional Seat District,
yes, ma'am.
Where would you stand when they wanted to, because the troops technically, I think, are supposed to be out of Afghanistan, what is it now, 2012, 2013 maybe?
Yes, ma'am.
We're supposed to be out of there.
Right.
Do you think we should go ahead and get out now?
I think the current timetable is appropriate.
Okay.
But like I said, if you look at where we spend our money, that's our priorities in our country. And personally, I would rather see people, our country, our taxpayers, invest their hard-earned money in education as opposed to destroying and then trying to rebuild a country halfway around the world.
Sure. Okay. Well, I mean, I don't think you'll find a lot of argument on that. It would be nice to be able to spend that money here.
Wouldn't it, though?
Yeah,
like I said, can you imagine what a $2 billion investment would do for the education system in South Carolina? And that's what we're spending on a weekly basis in Afghanistan.
Sure. But in the meantime, how would we go about doing that? Would it flow from the federal government or should it be through the states? Should there be lower taxes from the federal government so that the states have more money, or do we need to have more people working so that we have more of a tax base?
I think you hit it with the latter point. You have to have people working.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it comes back to the financial collapse. I mean, the reason we have so many people not paying in the tax system right now is they can't find employment. If you could provide jobs to those people, and if you can get those people working and get them paying back into the system, you know, you'll see the tax burden go down for everyone because everyone will be paying more of their fair share.
Sure. Now, but part of the problem is we have a lot of regulations that keep coming down and keep coming down.
Such as?
Regulations on all type of businesses, whether it's the coal business, whether it's whatever type of business that you're looking at. We keep getting hit with more and more paperwork, more and more. Part of the problem, does anybody know where Obamacare is going?
You know, I don't know where Obamacare is going in terms of, you know, regulations. I think that's something you obviously have to look into.
But that's one where people, you know, we have employers sitting on the sidelines in a lot of cases that are saying, not going to hire, not going to do anything,
right.
And staying static until I see the way things are going.
I think that's a lot of the case with investors in our country. I think there are a lot of people that have money that would invest in the stock market, but they don't want to see their money go, you know, right out the window once again. I think you have to have stability in your financial markets before people will really come off the sidelines and start to reinvest that money.
Well, I think when you talk about reinvesting in a new business, adding to your business, you know, what are we talking about for investing?
Both of those, all of the above.
Okay, because I think a lot of people just don't want the headache, and every time you turn around, there's another piece of paperwork or there's another regulation, or we keep looking at why should we do that if it's going to cost us more to be in business. I've been in business for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and it just keeps getting more and more restrictive, mm-hmm. on what we can and can't do.
Right. Is there a specific piece of regulation that applies to your business that you'd like to bring up?
No.
Okay.
I don't want to talk about my business particularly, because but I'm just saying there are all the time. What about, you know, as far as, like I said, the energy business? They are coming down with all these regulations. We're coming down with regulations on, nobody knows what the tax structure is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So everybody is concerned. Are we going to invest in a country when we don't know where it's going? I think a lot of people have concern. How is this election going to turn out? Are we going to turn it around? Are we going to go? Which direction are we going? So from that standpoint, it's very difficult for people to make decisions.
Yes, ma'am, you're correct.
So if you were in Congress, would you look at businesses and say that, for example, the water, so let's talk about the water, and you're talking about the air and this type of thing, the regulations.
Yes, ma'am.
Should we make sure that we keep top-notch water quality? Should we make sure we keep top-notch air quality? Or should we unleash the hounds and say, hey, get the job done and invest, kind of like they did after World War II, where they just said, let's do this?
I think you have to maintain high standards of water quality and air quality. Mm-hmm. I like to fish, and I don't want any mercury and lead in the fish I catch in Lake Greenwood going into my body. I like clean air. My father has breathing problems with asthma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see those direct correlations between the regulations put in place by the government to protect clean air and clean water as affecting my life personally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people, if you give them the option and say, you know, would you rather have clean water or would you rather have mercury and lead in your water, you know,
I don't think anybody is talking about mercury and lead in the water, but whether you keep it to the extreme standards or should you let off the brake a little bit and let people start building businesses and doing things that have held them back because it is so onerous to get into business. How many businesses, you have to go through so many regulations just to open a new business in this world. I mean, all the inspections and all the things that happen and how many things have to be fixed and refixed until the point that you just say, why should I do it?
Right. But my statement on that is those regulations are keeping the American people safe. I wouldn't want business to have no oversight whatsoever where they were allowed to pollute as much as they wanted to.
I think there's a big difference between pollute as much as you want to and just unleash the hounds a little bit so there is a little bit of freedom. We've never had so many regulations on these things as we have right now. But we are here with Kasen Gaither. If you have a question or a comment, how about give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're going to hear South Carolina news in just 3 seconds, so don't you go away. We'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday.
That's right. We're right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Yes, I'm Ann Eller. I'm interviewing today Kasen Gaither. He is the Democratic candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 3rd District. And Kasen, you know, one of the things that we were just talking about, Democrat, liberal.
First and foremost, I'm an American.
You're an American.
I'm an American. I'm running on the Democratic ticket, and I believe partisanship is killing our country. The fact that people view themselves strictly as Republican or strictly as Democrat is hurting America. I think if you go back 10 years, 15, 20 years in our country, we weren't this partisan. Republicans work with Democrats. Democrats work with Republicans to ensure that we got stuff done in our country. And I think far too often people draw those distinction lines and vote based on a party as opposed to the person. And this is really not about parties. This is a question of issues.
It is a question of issues, absolutely. But, you know, the Congress up there can be pretty tough on those that don't vote the party line. I mean, I guess that's why they call them a whip.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so, but where would you stand, I mean, as far as you're saying that as a Democrat, do you view yourself as a liberal or you feel you're more conservative?
I feel like I'm right in the middle. I mean, I grew up conservative. Like I said, I'm an entrepreneur. I have a small business myself. I finished a master's in international business. I'm not a lawyer. And I look at issues and make an informed decision based on the information. I wouldn't vote along strictly on party lines. I think, again, it's not a question of party. It's a question of issues. It's about evaluating each particular bill, each particular vote, and what it's going to do for our country. And, you know, this might sound crazy to hear, but if I was in Congress, I wouldn't vote 100% with the Democrats. You know, I would make my own decision. I'm my own man. I'm not going up there to carry Barack Obama's water. I'm going up there to make sure that the constituents in the 3rd Congressional District have opportunity, make sure they have jobs, make sure that there's economic prosperity, to make sure that there's a future for the young people that are growing up in this area.
You know, one of the things that Congress decided to do up there was to have no earmarks.
Right.
No earmarks. What do you think about earmarks?
I'm not in favor of earmarks.
Okay.
I can see where earmarks benefit certain districts, but I think when you wind up with a system that's nothing but pork and congressmen and congresswomen are only looking out for their individual districts, mm-hmm. that you sacrifice the whole based on the individual parts. It shouldn't be about what's best for the 3rd district or what's best for the 4th district. It should be what's best for the country. And I understand why congressmen do it. I understand why they have earmarks. But I don't think that's the right way to govern. I think you have to look at it holistically and not just break it down and just stake your claim. I think you're going up there to lead not just the 3rd Congressional District, but you're going up there to offer leadership for the country as a whole.
But you want to make sure that the 3rd District gets their fair share.
I want to make sure that the 3rd District is prosperous, but I don't think that involves allocating tax dollars just in this area to win votes. I think you have to look at it as what's good for the country as opposed to just your specific section. Having said that, you are an elected official from the 3rd Congressional District, and you are sent there to protect the interests of the people of the area that you're serving. So I see it both ways. But again, I think when it comes back to a tax issue and the taxpayers are on the hook, I think that that you have to look at it fairly, and you have to look at it across the board and not just in one specific area.
Okay, well, we'll see how that works for you, Kaysen.
Thank you, ma'am. I hope we do. I hope we get to have this conversation a year from now, and you can look at my voting record.
Okay, all right. I'll be looking forward to it.
I
go to Washington. I like to go see our congressman and broadcast from up there, and I do all that kind of stuff.
I hope you pay me a visit.
I will. Maybe you'll let me use part of your office.
Well, I don't know how big it'll be. I think coming in as a junior congressman, you're kind of on the lower end of the pecking order in terms of getting to draw for your congressional office. But I plan on, you know, if elected, I'll probably keep a cot there and try and sleep out of my office to save some money.
Okay. All right. And then eventually maybe you'll be able to work yourself up to a small pad that you share with somebody, right?
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed.
Okay. All right. Well, you have said that education is one of your big issues, educating our people here. You know, truthfully, when you look at what Piedmont Tech has done in this area and the workforce is doing in this area, I really think that they are doing a pretty good job of trying to get people educated, and the industries that have come into our area are definitely, they're working with those industries to make sure we end up with a workforce. One of the biggest problems with our workforce, though, here in the 3rd District is that we did have so many people that worked for Greenwood Mills,
mm-hmm.
and they are middle-aged,
right.
upper middle-aged, and the problem of them getting a job like what they had is pretty far removed.
Right, and you hit it. You know, the jobs that exist in this area, the low-skilled textile manufacturing, those jobs are gone. I hate to say it, but they're gone and they're not coming back. And the way to bring economic prosperity back here and to make sure that people are employed is to retrain your workers.
But a lot of those workers, I'm not sure they can be retrained at this point and what jobs they would actually be looking at. They can be retrained. That was a wrong statement.
I think you can teach an old dog new tricks.
No, that's not what I meant, though. I'm saying that they are at a point where a lot of the jobs that are coming out there now are very high technical skill jobs, lots of computer work, and we have a workforce that, for some of them, that would be a big stretch to go that direction, particularly at their age.
Yes, ma'am. It is a stretch, but I think it's something that's necessary. I read a quote in the New York Times posted a few months back that said, "We've gone from a nation of Lewis and Clark to a nation of Elmer Fudd and Yosemite Sam.
Mm-hmm.
When we used to sacrifice and save for the benefit of our children, we look for the easy way out. We've become complacent with our affluence. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think that America should continue to strive to be the best. You look at our math and science scores. I mean, we're not in the top 20 anymore. And that's disheartening to think that school children around the world have surpassed American children as the best and the brightest. And I'm very uncomfortable with that. There's a statement I read in That Used to Be Us, written by Tom Friedman, published about 7 or 8 months ago. And the quote in there says that 53% of current PhD students in our country are supplied by two Chinese universities. The majority of PhD students in America right now, as we sit here talking, are Chinese.
What do you think that is, just out of curiosity? Because maybe baby boomers and everything gave too much?
Frankly, they're outworking us. Like I said, we've become complacent with our affluence.
That's what I was saying, that baby boomers have given too much.
No, I don't think you can pin it all on the baby boomers. I think it's just a cultural shift in our country. I mean, if you look at my grandparents' generation, they were efficient. They didn't waste their resources. They were very mindful of being able to provide something to their children. And we still like to provide for our children, and we still, you know, invest in efficiency. But I think you have to get back to a place in our country where instead of, you know, coming home and watching Dancing with the Stars, that you help your children with their homework. We spend more money on video games in this country than we do on books. And I think that just speaks to a larger cultural issue. And you can't legislate that. I mean, you can't come out in Congress and introduce a bill to make sure that people read or, you know, study the homework with the kids. But it's an attitude that all of us have to embrace. We need to recognize that we're losing our place in the world. And I don't want to be the generation that saw America peak. I don't want to think that, you know, the rest of my life is going to be watching my country decline. I want to make sure that my children and my children's children still grow up in America that resembles, you know, the country I live in today, where there's economic opportunity, where hard work is rewarded.
Well, those are good things. But the problem with some of that is, isn't it the fact that that hard work, I mean, just like you said, you haven't been able to get a job.
Exactly.
I mean, and yet you were an entrepreneur. You started your own business. What
yes, ma'am.
Business did you start?
I had a historic walking tour in Charleston, South Carolina. It was called Red Fox Walking Tours.
Mm-hmm.
And I put the business on hold to run for this position. When I graduated business school in May of 2008, the economy was quickly slipping.
Right.
And I'll tell you when I saw it. The way it worked at the Moore School of Business was companies would have what they'd call an information session. They'd come in like a Thursday evening from maybe 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. They'd send a representative of the business. They would come in, talk about the business, talk about what positions they were hiring, and they would schedule interviews for the next day. Well, I guess it was...
Didn't have anybody coming in.
This is where I'm going with this. I believe it was late October 2007, Wachovia had scheduled an information session. Well, I showed up to the Wachovia information session in my pressed blue suit and my, you know, my nice shoes and my tie and, you know, came you
prepared.
Know, prepared. Right. The representative from Wachovia did not show up. This was October of 2007. And I walked out of that room and thought, huh, something's not right here. By September of 2008, every company that I would normally be applying for a job with was laying people off and pushing people out the door left and right. Like I said, I was National Political Science Honor Society. I have a master's in international business, and I could not get an interview. And that's not right. For about a year, I struggled. I waited tables. I had 2 degrees, and I was waiting tables in this country. And that's not...
You were not alone.
I was definitely not alone.
Absolutely.
About half my classmates, you know, were in the same position. Some got good jobs. Some of us didn't. So for about a year, I struggled, you know, trying to make ends meet. And I finally said, you know, to heck with this. Instead of looking for somebody else to give me a job, instead of looking for someone else to write me a paycheck, what can I do to earn money? How can I support myself? And there's not a lot of opportunity when you can't get a bank loan and you're, you know, on a shoestring budget starting a business. But I started a walking tour company, and while I wasn't making myself rich, I was able to get by on my own business, my own skills. And there's something extremely satisfying from having an idea and seeing that idea going from an abstract concept in your head, mm-hmm. to actually realizing a profit is one of the greatest experiences that anyone, that I think anyone can have. You have to have that fire in your belly and that drive and that ambition, and have to be a little bit of a risk taker to go out on your own and do that. But the rewards are tremendous.
But the problem that I see, Kaysen, is that a lot of people are looking for a handout rather than the ability to do that.
You're exactly right, and that comes back to the culture of our country. We can't be a culture of handout. We need to be a culture of hand up.
And you think you can change that? Just out of curiosity.
I don't think I can change that on my own, but I think spreading that message to this country will empower people that, you know, might not have thought that they could do it to say, you know what, let's try it. Let's take a risk. Let's see if we can make something out of this. And I think I really honestly believe this, that in 10 years, 15 years, when we look back at this period of American history, what was the Great Recession, the next wave of Fortune 500 companies will be startups right now in 2012. There are a lot of people, just like myself, that would have gone the corporate route because that was the path to wealth on, you know, the traditional basis, that are left out in the cold that have started their own business. I can think of a few of my friends that I finished business school with that were also not able to find employment and have gone on their own and started their own companies, and now they're slowly starting to turn a profit, and they're slowly seeing that light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming train.
It's not an oncoming train. All right. Well, that sounds great. Well, listen, we've got a little more time here. I tell you what, let's hear a word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to talk some more. If you've got a question, first question, though, before we take a break, though, Kaysen, we had a question come in. Who are you supporting at this moment for president, Barack Obama or Mitt Romney?
At this moment, I would say Barack Obama. And I know that's a very unpopular position, but I'm going to have to be convinced. Mitt Romney is, I'm open. Like I said, I vote for...
Well, he's a business person.
He is a business person, and I'd be interested in learning more about some of his policies. But just off the cuff, I know that he does not support the Dodd-Frank Act, which would add further regulations to the banking industry, and I keep coming back to it. Until we separate commercial banking and investment banking, we're headed down the road that we were in 2008. So just on that position alone, I find it hard to support Mitt Romney. But, you know, I'm open to listen to what he has to say, and he has an opportunity to win my vote.
All right. Well, we just heard it right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. Hey, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, Andy, and we'll be right back.
My cycle humps, ready to race to you. These days are on.
From trash to treasures along a country road, do you love classic country? Do you love to hear the old stuff that nobody plays? Well, we do on Saturday mornings, 9:30 to 12. Yes, it's From Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. You'll be sure to hear songs you haven't heard for ages and remember all the good times you had. So tune in on Saturday mornings to Trash to Treasures Along a Country Road. I'm Ann Eller. I'll be there. How about you on WCRS 1450 AM, 9:30 to 12, and on the internet at WLMA.net. Check it out on Saturday, 9:30 to 12, only on WCRS 1450 AM. Classic country, from trash to treasures along a country road.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days.
We're right back here. Oh, I tell you what, we're having a fast and furious discussion right here.
We're having a great time is what we're doing. I could sit here and talk to you all day.
Well, thank you, Kaysen. But we're having a great time talking about the issues, talking about things that are out there. One of the questions I was just asking you about was, I know obviously you believe in the separation of banks between investment and commercial banking, and
yes,
that's
ma'am.
A big issue for you.
Yes, ma'am.
But
yes.
Now let's move on, because how do we get people back to work? Saying that that is something that can be worked on, what other ways can we get people back to work by not having the government employ all of them?
I was just about to say, if you're looking at the government to start employing people, you have the wrong idea. What the government can do is create an environment that is pro-business, that helps business employ people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's
You think education is a big issue, retraining workforce, that's part of it.
Obviously, yes, ma'am. And I think it's not just focusing on kids that are in school now. Obviously, that's a huge component. They're going to be the workforce in the next 10 and 15, 20 years. But you have to Let's hope so. knock on wood.
Right.
But I think you also have to look at worker retraining. We touched on it earlier. There are a lot of people in the 3rd Congressional District that relied on light manufacturing, low-skilled manufacturing to support themselves. And those jobs have gone, and they're always going to go to the cheapest labor market. And that cheaper labor market right now is in China. Back in the 90s, it was in Mexico with NAFTA and everything that goes along with it. But those,
could we try to bring those manufacturing jobs back to the United States?
Absolutely. I think you absolutely have to bring those manufacturing.
Well, can we offer incentives to make them come back?
I believe so, and there was a bill that was in Congress about 2 weeks ago, the Import-Export Bank, which was a fund set up to allow foreign companies to borrow money from the U.S. to purchase U.S. goods, very similar to what was going on after World War II in the Marshall Plan. The U.S. loans the money out, they get the money back and a small return on the investment, plus it allows that foreign company to purchase our goods, and Boeing is a prime example of this.
Okay, yes, it is. Absolutely. Boeing has made a big difference in our state.
Yes, ma'am. And BMW as well. And if you look at BMW, you go back to BMW relocating in this area. When BMW came in, it also, you know, caused Michelin to come in. And there's a whole cluster of industries that have located up there near the Greer plant because it's an industrial hub of our state now.
Sure.
And I think that's fantastic.
Absolutely. And part of the reason we need the port is because we need that direct route in and out of the state.
Yes, yes, ma'am, you're exactly right.
So the port will be coming. What do you think of the fact that our state government went ahead and got the funds set aside to be able to, if the federal government doesn't come through with the $120 million to mm-hmm. support the port, the survey and doing the port? Mm-hmm. What do you think about our state government going ahead and doing this?
I think it was a very progressive move on the part of the state. Like you said, the port in Charleston is vital to the economy of South Carolina, and we need to do everything in our power to make sure that port stays open and properly functioning and can compete with other ports around the country.
Absolutely. So, the port is, and I think a lot of people don't realize that the port is important for Greenville and the upstate as it is for the coast. I think a lot of people don't understand that, so that's very important,
too. And thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's see. We had a call in, and then we're going to talk a little bit about immigration, and I understand you lived in Mexico for a while.
I did.
So we're going to talk about that, but let me ask you this question here first. Barry Williams says, a state house survey only showed 40% of Democrats supported Obama. Why do you think that it is? Even Harpulian disparaged Obama in private.
Well, I don't agree with the president on a lot of issues. I'm going to have disagreement. I don't know why specifically. Mm-hmm. I know that there are a lot of people that are very dissatisfied with some of the things that our president has done since he's been in office. And like I said, I take issue with some of them as well.
Why do you support him? Why would you, if you had to sum it up in a nutshell, why would you be voting for President Obama?
That's a great question. And again, I think it comes back to looking at the two men running for the position. I don't think it's so much a question of party. I think it's a question of issues. And I find that, I disagree very strongly with some of Mitt Romney's positions. I think he has an opportunity to evolve on those issues. He has an opportunity to win my vote.
We're all evolving around here.
some of us more than others.
Yes.
But I think I'm still open-minded. Like I said, I'm running on the Democratic ticket, but I'm an American, and I want to cast a vote for the person that's going to do the best job for our country. But again, I come back specifically to...
Well, is there a specific issue or issues that you think President Obama has handled well?
Well, that's... That's open for debate right there.
Right.
I think, again, coming back to financial reform, I think the separation of commercial banking and investment banking is very important, and I believe the president has taken the right stance on that. I support the Dodd-Frank Act. I support the Volcker Rule that requires banks to maintain your deposits and can't gamble with taxpayer money to avoid another financial bailout. And again, like I said, the presumptive Republican nominee is against that act. And I'd like for him to, explain. I need to, hear him talk specifically why he's against that. But I think you have to have...
Against what now?
The Dodd-Frank Act specifically.
Okay.
I think you have to have a stable financial system, or we're going to be right back where we were in 2008, where your 401k is down 50%, your house has dropped in value 35%, your son and your daughter have graduated from a university and can't find employment. Maybe they're waiting tables. Maybe they're working at a hotel as a bellman. And let me say this. I'm not disparaging people that wait tables. It is a heck of a lot tougher than it looks. But I didn't study international finance and international operations management to refill your sweet tea.
Well, maybe you overshot when you went to college, Casey.
I hope not, Ann.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We'll carry this over for just a second here. Sorry, I just had to say that because, you know, we got so many kids, though, that have graduated from college and are going back to school for HVAC for engineering for a whole different category than what they went to school for because the jobs are available more for
technical
type jobs.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. So we are actually out of time, but I would like to very quickly, I'll give you a couple more minutes here, very quickly say to you, what would you like our listeners to know about you? My philosophy in doing all these interviews and knocking myself out every day interviewing everybody I can interview for this political is to make sure that the people know who they're voting for. I think there's nothing worse than to just go in and say, well, that name looks good, and vote for that person. So go. You've got 2 minutes.
I could not agree with you more, Ann. And first and foremost, just let me say thank you for having me and allowing me this platform to speak and try and get my message out there. Again, I'm an American. I might be running on the Democratic ticket, but I'm not up there to carry water for Barack Obama and the Democratic Party. I'm up there to look out for the American people and the voters of the 3rd Congressional District. The primary focus of my campaign, again, you've heard me say this, it's going to sound like a broken record, but we have to have, exactly. But if you keep saying it, hopefully enough people will pay attention and it'll sink in, is we have to have a separation of investment banking and commercial banking in this country. Until banks are not allowed to gamble with your deposit, we have the potential to see another collapse like we saw in 2008. That's primary focus of my campaign. I want to see second focus of my campaign is going to get the political action committee money out of our government. Washington is broken. The system in D.C. is not working for the average American. My campaign has taken 100% of my donations are coming from individuals. I have taken not a single cent from a political action committee. The current incumbent congressman from the 3rd Congressional District, as of April 2012, had taken about $230,000 from political action committees, totaling or accounting for 63% of his entire campaign budget for this election cycle. When I'm on the floor of the House of Representatives, or my opponent, the incumbent, is on the floor of the House of Representatives, who do you think he's looking out for? Is he looking out for the average voter of the 3rd Congressional District, or is he having in the back of his mind the political action committees that have written him six-figure checks? If I don't take that political action committee money and you vote for me, it sends a message to everyone, every other politician in this country, that we want PAC money out of our government. We want to see the representatives looking out for the voters as opposed to the special interest and the large corporate donors that are financing them.
Well, all righty then.
I hope you don't get
any money coming into you except individuals now.
Thank you, Ann. And if you'd like to contribute to my campaign, if you go to Gaither2012, GAITHER2012.com, there's a Donate Now button on there, and you can donate directly to my campaign, and we can make a difference and get PAC money out of our government and restore faith and restore power to the individual voters.
Absolutely. Well, Kasen Gaither, you are simply capable of, I think, making a difference. Let's hope that when you get out there,
ma'am,
that the voters hear your message.
I think that's the nicest thing you've said to me all day.
Well, we are right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. I've been interviewing, actually talking with Kasen Gaither here today. He's a Democratic candidate for U.S. House 3rd District, and he is going to be at the Stump meeting tomorrow, Thursday night, the 24th, 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock,
that's right, at the rental center, so make sure you check it out. Going to be a lot of candidates there. Take advantage of it. It's your opportunity to know the candidates. Hey, I think I get to take a quick break here, and then I got to come right back at it, so don't you go away. I'm Ann Eller. Kaysen, thanks so much for coming out today.
Thank you so much, Ann.
All right.
Really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Thursday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. The weekend.